Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, June 24th. I'm Ray Graff. You may be exercising a little more with the good weather, testing your body's limits a little more. Maybe you have a few more aches and a few more pains. Well, joining us today is physical therapist Matthew Goodemote of Goodemote Physical Therapy to tell us about body maintenance, stretching, and pain relief. If you have a question about an ache or a pain, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Also, you may email, if you wish, voxpop@wamc.org is the email address. But we love the calls. It's a call-in show. 800-348-2551 is the number. Physical therapy, Matthew Goodemote, your calls. Coming up on Vox Pop right after this news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us once again to talk physical therapy is Matthew Goodemote. Matthew is one of just 355 spine specialists holding a diploma from the McKenzie Spine Institute International. He and his staff at Goodemote Physical Therapy provide a whole body approach to therapy by offering a blend of exercise-based and manual therapy. Goodemote Physical Therapy offers small group strength training classes for osteoporosis, fall prevention, and athletic performance, and their programs are designed to prevent injury and improve your performance in sports and recreation. You got a question about physical therapy? He's in the house. 800-348-2551 is our number, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Matthew Goodemote,
hey.
Welcome back to Studio A. How are you, sir?
Thank you, Ray. Good to be here.
It looks just the same, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But it's good. It's nice. I like it.
Dingy, sort of a Stalinist 50s look here. But, you know, we're doing all right. Hey, man, so I heard that you are giving talks to runners now that people are out. And you know what? As a motorist, it annoys me a little bit.
Okay.
Maybe I shouldn't be annoyed, but they often do not follow the rules of the road. But you, and so the, and there are a plethora of runners out, and that was really my point before I started my rant. You've been giving talks to runners about ways to avoid some of the common injuries.
Yes. So runners, especially someone who is starting running, who hasn't been running for a while, or somebody who is increasing their mileage, have a tendency to develop some aches and pains, in particular plantar fasciitis and shin splints. Those are two of the most common injuries for runners.
Now, what's a shin splint again?
So there's two different types, really. So in our lower part of our leg, we have a bone called the tibia.
Yeah.
It's the big one. Mm-hmm. And on the inner part of that is the one of the type of shin splints. And that one has muscles called the posterior tibialis and flexor digitorum brevis. And they call it the medial compartment. And then you have the anterior compartment, which is more to the outer part. And those are going to be muscles like your anterior tibialis.
Right.
So depending on where it is, indicates what might be happening with the runner. So the number one reason for this to happen is just increase in mileage. So somebody who hasn't been running goes out to run and they develop these type of aches and pains.
Mm-hmm.
So I have found in my practice that finding the muscles along the shin bone and doing some manual work is incredibly beneficial. But the long-term success comes from A, being smarter about your training, and B, doing strength training. So a lot of people overlook strength training as a valuable tool for injury prevention, but it is perhaps the best tool we have.
What about shoes?
Yes. So I have my biases with shoes.
Here we go.
So let's talk plantar fasciitis
first of all.
So one of the people who are predisposed to developing plantar fasciitis have a lack of dorsiflexion. Now, dorsiflexion is when you bring the top of your foot up towards your nose. And when we're walking around or running around in these shoes that have heels on them, it keeps our foot in a more plantar flex position.
Uh-huh.
So we're more likely to develop problems with high heels on the shoes.
Okay.
Another common mistake people make is they get the cushion because they hear from the people who are selling shoes and from elite runners that more cushion is good for you.
Yeah.
It sounds like it would make sense. But according to physics, that actually increases the pressure, does not decrease the pressure.
All right, time out. Yeah. Now, that's okay. Elite runners say, okay, you get more cushion.
Yep.
You figure these are the elite runners. They're the best at it.
Yes.
They might know. Why don't you agree?
Because they're sponsored by said companies that are
That's
a conspiracy theory.
I see.
No, so the idea behind it is that if you have more cushion, it's going to absorb the shock. But what happens is we have these forces, ground reaction forces and joint reaction forces. And when our foot hits the ground, these forces go up. So if you have extra cushion, it takes longer for the foot to come in contact with the ground, and that actually increases the forces, not decreases the forces. So I do not advocate heels for shoes, nor do I advocate a lot of cushion for runners.
Now, in fairness, I don't see too many people out in my neighborhood running in high heels. But still, I mean, maybe it happens.
Come to Saratoga. They're all over the place.
Oh, really? Very interesting. The number here is 800-348-2551. If you have a physical therapy question for Matthew Goodemote, 800-348-2551 is our number. You're really... as I recall, and you know, we did so many shows during the pandemic, and you weren't here. One sort of blended into the next, but didn't we take some calls from barefoot runners?
I don't recall. Maybe.
Yeah.
So I've read.
Oh, maybe that was a podiatry show.
It could be.
Probably would lead to some foot problems.
Yes.
All right. Well, you know what? Let's take an email here.
Okay.
Sorry about that. My memory's pretty bad. James writes, "How do you treat bicep tendonitis? Is it complicated by bursitis in the same shoulder?"
So the bicep tendon that he's speaking of is not at the elbow. So when people think of the bicep, they think the big muscle that bulges out in your upper arm.
Yeah.
But the bicep tendon actually goes into the shoulder itself. So bicep tendonitis develops at the shoulder, not at the elbow. The treatment for it is a couple things. And yes, the first part of the question is, can you have bursitis there? Yes, there's a bursa that's underneath the top of the bone, and that can be a bursitis. And that would be different than the tendonitis of the bicep, but they can happen at the same time. The long head, so there's two different tendons for the bicep, and the long head of the bicep goes into the shoulder joint and attaches to the labrum. So there are times that the problem is actually in the joint itself, and then the symptom is the bicep.
Ah.
Versus there's other times where the bicep is the source of the problem and needs to be addressed that way. In both cases, in our clinic, we do manual therapy to work on the tissue, and then it's, can you guess it? It's going to be about strengthening. So it's learning the proper exercises to strengthen the muscles. And strengthening is very beneficial for tendonitis. It's one of the things that helps it the most.
Matthew Goodemote joins us today. It's physical therapy on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. And let's grab one call before the first break. Gina in Monterey. Gina, you're on.
Yes, I would like to know if the physical therapist could recommend therapy or manual therapy or strengthening for very bad feet, such as bunions and toes that flap over other toes, misalignment of the toes.
So the one of the biggest problems with our current shoes that we wear, they're often very narrow in the toe box. And what that leads to is pushing the toes closer together, creating things like bunions and the toes curling over top.
Yeah.
There's not stuff that we do in physical therapy to correct the deformities, because oftentimes when we see them, they're too far gone to correct.
Uh-huh.
But all that being said, I would absolutely advocate for exercises for the foot. And I do mobilizations to the toes and to the foot joints themselves just to make sure they're as mobile as we can. And then a simple exercise of just balancing on one foot can strengthen the muscles of the foot itself.
Uh-huh.
And there was this researcher
by a physical therapist.
Yes.
In physical therapy.
Correct.
So what do? You just pull the toes out a little bit? What works?
You can do that. There's different techniques we use for mobilizations. And essentially, mobilization is moving the joint while the patient is passive. So instead of the patient going through the range of motion, the therapist takes them through the range of motion. And oftentimes this will alleviate some discomfort. But again, the deformity is not something you can actually correct in physical therapy.
You got that, Gina?
Okay.
Okay.
I guess there is a tremendous deformity, but I would imagine that any kind of exercise and balancing and mobilization would help.
Yeah, strengthening in particular, and then it is a good idea to have a physical therapist teach you the proper balancing exercises. People with really bad bunions are more susceptible to falling, so you don't have as good a balance due to that. And yet you would still want to train the muscles of the foot, and you'd still want to train the dynamic mobility, which is basically balancing and then doing movements that are challenging the balance.
Would you say that Tai Chi would be a good place also?
Tai Chi has definitely been shown in the research to be a good source for balance.
Why?
Well, I actually went to a Tai Chi course, Ray, and
right.
the gentleman told us it's actually due to how deliberate and slow the movements are that actually helps to improve the brain's function to improve our balance.
Very interesting. So, Gina, we got to take a break here, but good luck with the bunions, et cetera. 800-348-2551 is our number. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. To reiterate, he's not a big fan of shoes. So we'll get back to the physical therapy in a moment. We're on Vox Pop on WAMC. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Zach the engineer getting assertive here, turning the microphone on whenever he wants. I didn't cue it, but that's fine. You know what? That's okay. It's all right. That's all right. Let's say this word together now. This email came in from Helen. Helen says, subject heading, spondylolisthesis.
Yes, spondylolisthesis.
And how do you spell it?
S-P-O-N-D-Y-L-O-L-I-T-H-E-S-I-S.
All right, man. It's spelled wrong.
She's probably right.
Yeah. Okay, so you're wrong. Can you use it in a sentence? No, never mind. Yeah. Helen writes, what exercises would help? Is manual physical therapy beneficial?
So spondylolisthesis is when, most often when we're getting older and we degenerate, and instead of the vertebrae degenerating over top of each other, they start to move relative to one another. So this is a case where vertebrae on top is moving forward over vertebrae on bottom. It can also happen with athletes. So gymnasts have a predisposition to this as well. And there's other athletes, but anyways, so, it's one of those conditions where if you have different grading systems. So a grade one is noticeable on x-ray, but it's generally benign. If it's progressing to a grade two, it definitely becomes more of a concern. And if it's a grade three, you're usually talking to a surgeon. If it's a grade four, you are having surgery. And the good news is this is a type of back surgery that's incredibly effective. So it's always not a good idea to have surgery, but it's a effective surgery. So the exercises you need to do for this condition are, number one, make sure that's what's causing back pain if you're having back pain. I have two patients that I've treated who have grade twos and grade three spondylolisthesis, and it's not the source of their pain. But the solution is strengthening, and specifically core strengthening, and it is something that needs to be done and needs to be done on a regular basis.
And just one more time, could you say the word?
Spondylolisthesis.
Fine. This one's from Sue, subject heading broken ankle, which are two words I can actually read. Sue writes, my husband broke his ankle 5 weeks ago. He has two avulsion fractures. He got an infection from the cast, which was put on when he went to the ER, got over that in a couple of weeks, but since then has been unable to put any weight on his foot. He is now in a walking boot, but is keeping his foot elevated as much as possible. Whenever he's upright, the blood seems to rush to his feet or to his foot in seconds. Can you suggest anything he can do to exercise or just even move around a little while he's prone?
So absolutely. Number one, an avulsion fracture just means the bone has chipped away from the thicker, bigger part of the bone. Mm-hmm. So I've had avulsion fractures myself. So one of the things that's happening is the swelling, and the swelling is where a lot of source of the pain is, and it inhibits motion, and it also affects the ability to bear weight. Mm-hmm. So elevation is a great idea, but oftentimes people think elevation as meaning just having the foot off the ground. But for me, elevation means the foot points towards the ceiling. So the higher up the foot is elevated, the more gravity pulls the blood out of the ankle, and the quicker and better it will feel. So when we elevate for our heart, we want the foot above the heart, which is not really elevation if you have an ankle fracture. So the example I give people is laying on the back of the couch with the foot on the back of the couch, that kind of elevation. So it needs to be the higher, the better. And then while on the couch, there's no reason to have the boot on because he's not bearing weight. So in that case, he would want to take the boot off and then range of motion exercises, which would be gentle, pointing the toe up and down, side to side, round and round. We do things like alphabet. So people have to draw letters with their feet while elevated.
Really?
And then for
weight. How do you hold the crayon?
That's the trick. You put it between the toes.
Very nice.
So the other exercise you can do is a basic chair squat, which is basically just sitting down in a chair and standing up. And this is a partial weight-bearing type of movement because the other foot's on the ground as well. And you can just adjust based on how he tolerates to put the foot on the floor more and more to get some more weight-bearing through it.
Matthew Goodemont joins us. It's Physical Therapy Today on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. I've made mistakes. I have done things wrong, Zach. I made fun of you, and now I have screwed something up. Let's try. Okay, David in Schenectady, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead. You're on.
Okay, great. My question is about calf cramps. I suffer from calf cramps, both my legs, and they're particularly bad in the morning. I've been to doctors. They're talking about stretching, making sure staying hydrated. But of late, I've noticed that when my back, and I have arthritis in my lower back, is really painful, it's my calves. Is there a relationship, and what might I be able to do?
All right. The words leading up to calves sort of dropped out on us, David. Can you just recap that?
So you said about the arthritis, and then when it's particularly bad, and then you for a second.
Hello?
Oh, and when it's particularly bad, when the pain and arthritis is bad, is there something I can do, with that?
So to make sure that so first of all, you can have calf cramping that's coming from the spine. So there are times where people who have a condition called stenosis, for example, as they stand for a long period of time or they walk for a long period of time, they'll get more and more tension in the legs and it can feel like a cramp. However, most times the cramping is not related to the spine. It can be related to circulation as opposed to the spine. So if you're not getting proper blood flow, you'll get tension and cramping in the legs. As far as stretching goes, I would advocate to do mobility, which is a slightly different thing in my world, because it means keeping the tissue as mobile as possible. So perhaps trying things like foam rolling or even just manually massaging your leg and seeing if that has a benefit. Now, sometimes if it's due to the arthritis, for example, arthritis is very consistent and very predictable, meaning that when you're doing something, if you have degeneration in your lumbar spine, there's certain activities and movements that are always going to bother it. So if it's intermittent, then there's perhaps something else that's going on. And the last thing I'll say is there are times where people are having the sensation of a cramp and it is due to a nerve coming down the leg, but it's pretty unusual for it to be in both. And so the solution for the spine is movement. It is exercise, and it's doing general mobility exercises for the spine every single day. And with arthritis in particular, I'd have you doing some backwards bends. So just standing, putting the hands in the small of your back and bending backwards, but doing it frequently throughout the day. Like every time you go to the restroom, do a couple backwards bends and seeing if that has an impact on you.
Okay, David? Oh, well, you're welcome. Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's Vox Pop. Matthew Goodemont joins us today to talk physical therapy. And Ted is in Montague. Hello, Ted.
Hi there.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, Ted, if you're inside, can you take it off speakerphone by any chance? It sounds a lot better.
Hold on one second.
That would be swell.
How is that?
Oh, my God, the audio is fantastic. Go ahead. You're on.
Okay. All right. I am 56 years old, run about 3 times a week, about 3 miles each time. And just about a week ago, got a what feels to me like a strain, so kind of sharp burning pain in my lower calf, about maybe 4 or 5 inches up above my heel, my Achilles tendon.
Yes.
It is getting a little better or changing anyway. And what I'm wondering is if I try to just sort of run carefully on it and continue to roll out my calves and continue doing my eccentric heel drops, which I do each morning.
Yep.
Am I risking aggravating and worsening this injury by not giving it an extended period, like weeks without running on it? Or can I continue to use it?
you offer lots of trick questions.
Yeah.
So that is so any men in particular over the age of 50 are susceptible to Achilles tears, and to rupture your Achilles tendons mean that you would be out of commission for months, and it would often require surgical intervention to reattach the tendon. So without seeing you specifically, it's hard to encourage you to keep running, because if it's starting to tear, rupture, it wouldn't be good.
No.
So having the So foam rolling is absolutely advocated for the muscle belly. There's no doubt about it. The eccentric heel drops, also a good idea. You would want to spend some time working on strength training, and strength training, adding weights perhaps to those calf raises instead of just doing body weight, because the Achilles takes.
I do.
And don't be afraid of increasing the load and making sure that you do it with both your knees straight and your knees bent. So when you're doing calf raises. And again, heavier loads are recommended. And then we also do an exercise in the clinic where you're doing, it's called a step down. So you basically stand on a step with the injured side, and you tap the heel of the non-injured side down on the ground. And same thing, you do it in the beginning with no weights, and then as it gets easier, you do more and more loading to it. And as far as running, what I would actually advocate is that you do some fitness walking, and perhaps getting a backpack with some weight in it and going out and finding some hills and walking up and down the hills to get a good cardiovascular workout, and simultaneously working on the strength of that Achilles before I would attempt to run. And then when it is time to run, I would do a run walk return to run program, starting at 3 minutes of walking, 1 minute of run, and do that for two consecutive sessions. And as long as there's no injury or a problem, then go to 2 minutes of walk, 2 minutes of run. Do that two consecutive sessions and carry on.
But I mean, you, go ahead, about, Ted. You go first.
About how long until that walk to run? Actually, let me back up a second. Just add, the pain that I'm feeling is what's the large muscle at the top of the calf? Is that the gastroc?
Yeah. Yep.
Right where that joins.
Yeah.
Is it the soleus that's underneath?
It is. Right, but that's Go ahead.
Right where that joins the soleus is where I'm feeling this pain.
Yeah, and I would hate to have that be the tear spot where you rupture. So I'm not going to walk away from it. It's not. I can't tell you for certainty, because again, I'm doing this over the radio.
Right.
But it's also, and I don't have X-ray eyes, even if you were here. But the bottom line is that you want to do this so that you have zero symptoms, not just a light symptom, but zero symptoms before you start to do the return to run program. And then how long it takes is going to be based on how that responds. So if you go out the first time and it's really sore the next day, that's your body saying it's too much too soon. So you got to go back to walking.
I'm going to go get this checked out then with my doctor. It sounds like potentially it's something not to mess around with. So.
I wouldn't. Yeah, your age gets me nervous, and just where it's located.
That you're old, Ted. We don't want to imply that. Thank you very much for the call. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org if you got a physical therapy question. Teresa's in Stillwater. Hello, Teresa.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have had two hip replacements in the past year and a half. I want to know if using a stationary bike would build up my strength. It's still difficult to go up the stairs and even down the stairs leg over leg.
Yes.
And I just feel weak.
Yes.
But, you know, there's no discomfort in the hips, but I need to build my strength.
Correct.
Would a bicycle, stationary bike do that?
It's not an effective tool for what you're looking for. What type of hip surgery did you have? Is the scar in the front or to the side?
Anterior.
Okay, anterior.
Anterior.
So with the anterior, generally speaking, you can get going pretty quickly with walking and things, but you would want to do specific exercises to achieve the ability to go up and down the stairs. And we do exercises like step-ups and step-downs. The safest exercise that we do in the clinic is a basic thing called a chair squat, which is literally just sitting down in a chair and standing up. And then to make it harder, what you do is you stagger your feet. So you'd put the left foot slightly in front of the right. And what that does is it requires more work out of that right leg to do the work. And I would be working on those on a daily basis, and also doing the stairs, but intentionally trying to go up and down reciprocally and holding on to the rail, especially when going down, to make sure that you're, you know, not going to fall or anything like that. But the bicycle is not a great tool for this. You want to do...
It's not a good thing.
No, I would...
Okay.
Yeah,
thank you very much, sir.
Sure, you're welcome.
Thanks a lot for the call. Matthew Goodemoat is our guest. What sort of injury can a, say, a mid-50s fellow get from a knee injury, from walking up a stairs and not carrying anything?
Probably this, the patellar tendon. So,
oh, I got that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we all
hurts.
Have them, hopefully.
It hurts real bad, man. I don't like it.
Yes.
But, I mean, literally, this is what happens when you're at 55, 57. Now,
yes.
You walk up the stairs, you say, I wasn't doing anything different,
yeah.
And it hurts.
Yes. So the solution is to do more stairs.
Well, my immediate solution was to lie on the couch and watch the Mets game. And it worked. Sharon and Brewster. Sharon, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I had suffered a vertebral compression fracture 8 or 9 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And I was not given any exercises to do. And people ask me, what are you doing? What are you doing? I'm very active. I'm a farm manager of a very small farm.
Yep.
And I never really took much time off. The only thing that hurts anymore, I tried that exercise you just recommended to somebody.
Uh-huh.
With my hands behind my back, bending backward, I cannot do that. That is painful.
So how did you how'd you get the fracture? First of all, was it a fall or was it something else?
No.
Okay.
No, we don't know. And But they are not thinking it's osteoporosis.
Okay,
it's
that was where I was going with
something.
It. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
and I think it was from an accident from '96. Actually, I think I need a weak thing in my body.
So that backwards bend would be my number one exercise
for you. The backward bend?
Yeah, and it's not going to do anything to strengthen, which you would need, but if you're a farm manager and you're working on the farm doing any kind of physical activity, you'll get some good strengthening that way. But that backwards movement, you don't need to get it overnight, so it'd be just practice doing it. It's not a stretch per se, so you don't need to stay where it's uncomfortable, but just go back as far as you can and then come out of it again. And part of the reason is it is a safe way to go because the compression fractures happen to the body of the bone, and that's in the front, and that's what we compress when we bend forward. So bending backwards is a safe movement. It doesn't mean it's going to be comfortable, but it is safe, and I would advocate for you to do that on a regular basis. And then strengthening exercises, there's a whole bunch of stuff you can do, like bridges and dead bugs and things that are good for your core.
Sorry, what?
It's called a dead bug.
Yeah, what?
Why?
So it's easy to Google what it is, but it's a way to work your abdominal muscles without doing a crunch, because a crunch is a terrible idea, so please don't do crunches.
Why is it? Okay,
sit-ups.
You know what? Every time he comes on the show, Sharon, he disabuses us of all these things we thought were normal.
Yes.
Crunches are not good now.
So crunches are okay, but she has a compression fracture,
and
so doing those increases your intra-abdominal pressure, and it increases the pressure on the vertebrae
in
the front.
So for Sharon, it isn't good.
And if you have a disc problem, crunches are not a great idea either. And there's also a multitude of ways to work your abdominals without doing those things. But on the farm, one of my favorite exercises I do in the clinic are farmer's carries, which is basically carrying weights in either arm. So if you're on a farm, get 2 buckets of water and carry them from point A to point B, and you will absolutely strengthen your core muscles doing that.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Hey, Sharon, you're in Brewster, New York?
I am.
What a great town. How are things down there?
Things are great, but they want to tear the town down and rebuild it.
Why? It's a great town.
Mm.
All right, well, let's not get into that.
Lovely town.
That's another show.
Yeah, and I'm glad. Well, and also I wanted to just say I'm glad to hear what you said about crunches, because I'm kind of addicted to them. For maybe more than 20 years, I do 100 every morning, but not since I had this accident.
Yeah. Look up dead bug.
Dead bug?
Dead.
No.
Dead is or dying. Dead and dying bug. It's a safe way to engage your abdominal muscles. Basically, what you do is you lie on your back and you gently press your back into the floor. You have your hands and feet in the air, and then you touch 1 foot down to the floor while maintaining that gentle pressure of your back into the ground.
Good Lord.
And that works your abdominal muscles. And the dying bug is you do your arms and legs at the same time.
Huh.
So they go in opposite directions.
And make sure you YouTube that one, Sharon, because it looks very interesting.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks a lot for the
Thank
call.
You.
Enjoy Brewster. 800-348-2551. Seriously. I mean, who came up with that? What bug
Shirley
does
Shirley Sharman.
That? Really?
She's
right.
A famous PT.
All right. Let's go to Amanda in Great Barrington. Hello there, Amanda.
Hi there. Thanks for all this great information. I have a question. I'm a veterinarian, and I recently threw my back out at work, and this was my first time ever experiencing anything like that. Mm-hmm. So I've really tried to tune in to my body and a lot of chronic pain I've actually been dealing with even in my 20s. But I am trying right now to figure out what's going on with my neck. I wake up every morning with a lot of neck pain, yeah. And I have invested in every pillow that I have been marketed. I am unfortunately, I'm trying not to be too gullible, but these are so expensive,
yeah.
And I'm not really getting any better. So yeah. Do you have a recommendation for like the best kind of sleep position for any yes. human being?
Yeah. So I sell pillows. No, I'm just kidding.
No, cut it out.
So so the slogan is fix the day and the night will fix itself.
Really?
So yeah. So during the day is when
Shakespeare?
I don't know. All right. So doing exercises for your neck during the day is what I would do. And
okay.
I would make sure you have full range of motion, and that's full range of motion in rotation, side bend, flexion, and extension. And if any of those movements are uncomfortable or you lack movement, that's the problem and why it's giving you grief in the morning. There is no correct
okay.
pillow, despite what all those marketing people say, and there is no correct position. So the ideal no. way to do it
with
is to...
Hang on, Amanda. I disagree with Mr. Goodabone.
Yes.
A bad
yes.
pillow is a very bad thing.
Yes.
And, you get what you pay for. We go through a lot of pillows in my
yes.
house, and let me tell you something. Some
yes.
of them really are terrible.
Yes. So it's going to be based on the individual, though. So
uh-huh.
there are people who
okay.
are stomach sleepers, and giving them a big foam pillow would be disastrous for their neck. People who sleep on the side, giving them a little flat pillow would be hard for them. So it's going to be a product of the individual, and there's a lot of variables there. And according to the research, Ray, there is no correct position. So people, once you fall asleep, you're changing
sure.
your position anyways. And
hey,
so if you resolve your day and you feel good, then most people will have a better night's sleep.
Amanda, why don't you try sleeping like a dead bug and see what happens?
Yeah, there we go. I'll try that tonight.
Well,
thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. We'll take a break here. Matthew Goodamode is here. It's physical therapy. 800-348-2551 is our number. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Okay, we'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. It's physical therapy today with Matthew Goodamode. Our number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. And Matt, Sarah wrote us, I had anterior hip replacement 2.5 years ago. Structurally successful. However, I suffer from meralgia parenthetical, lateral femoral cutaneous nerve impingement. Cut it out, Sarah. It begins about 4 o'clock every day and can be debilitating.
Oh.
I swim every day, stretch, walk, etc. I've been going to PT for 2 years. No relief. Do you know what any of those things that I read are, Matt?
The femoral cutaneous nerve is often triggered by people wearing too tight of fitting clothing. The anterior procedure, you can have neuralgia that can come from that just because when you go in to do the surgery, you can affect the nerves that way. However, the timing of the day is the unusual part that I'm not really sure what that has to do with why the symptoms are elevated. Typically, if you're going to have a neuralgia from the surgery, it's going to be a persistent / constant symptom, and it won't have a lot of change. So if it is intermittent and it is changing, then I would suggest looking at the spine to see if that's involved. And I have a gentleman right now who has had an anterior hip replacement 2 or 3 years ago, and I have no doubt that his low back is what's causing his lateral thigh pain.
I mean, does it make sense that it would begin around 4 o'clock every day?
No, that's the part that's unusual. So I would look into, so when these things are not there and then they suddenly come there, we often look, we don't look at the most obvious reason for it. So for example, if at 4 o'clock every day is when she's sitting down talking to a friend or working on the computer,
yeah.
then it's the sitting that's provoking it.
Gotcha.
So whatever's happening at 4 o'clock, if it's consistent, then I would look into that, and I would specifically look into the posture of the spine, and I would look into the posture of the hip itself.
All right, this one's from Lynn in Albany. Can physical therapy be beneficial for someone with polymyalgia rheumatica.
Yes. So that's just essentially that you're having pain everywhere. So yeah. Poly is all over.
Right.
And it is, there are certain things we can do in physical therapy exercises to teach that. Strengthening, again, is one of the big things, working on activities, balance, keeping the joints healthy through range of motion. So there are things, and we definitely see patients like that in the clinic.
This one is from Cheryl. Cheryl says, any suggestions for stiffness and bursitis pain in one's knee while waiting for an orthopedic appointment? An x-ray showed moderate arthritis, no injuries, but somehow pain and some swelling just showed up one morning.
So bursitis is, boy.
Is that an overused term?
Yeah, and it's to make sure, because there's like 30 bursas in the knee, so to know what bursa she's meaning. And there's a bursa on the inner part of the knee called the pes anserine, which is where a group of muscles come down, and that often will benefit from doing manual therapy to the muscles themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's arthritis in the knee or there's a tear in the meniscus, then she'll get swelling on the inner part of the knee, and it will affect her ability to bend her knee fully, in which case there are definitely exercises like compression, elevation, and then strengthening for the hip pelvis area.
Yeah.
The hip pelvis strengthening helps to reduce the pressure through the knee joint itself. And the hip pelvis muscles, the muscles of your thighs start in the hip pelvis area. So it's pretty much working on the core gluteus muscles in particular. And then I do a lot of soft tissue work. So keeping the tissues nice and mobile helps to reduce the pain.
This one is from Marcia, who was on hold but lost the call, got disconnected before we got to her. So Marcia in Avril Park writes, please talk about Morton's neuroma and non-surgical interventions. I have it in both feet, along with plantar fasciitis. I went to a podiatrist, and he only offered surgery as an option. I really don't want to do that. So let's talk about Morton's neuroma.
So Morton's neuroma and the, let's see, third and fourth toes, there's a little where the nerve branches off and supplies those toes. And a neuroma is a swelling of the nerve, and it causes pain and or tingling into the toes.
Mm-hmm.
So doing manual therapy, just rubbing the foot in that area can be beneficial. And often the solution is cortisone right to the neuroma as opposed to doing surgery. Plantar fasciitis surgery, I don't like a lot. It's obviously there's time and place where it's necessary, but the plantar fascia needs to have a lot of work done into the calf muscles to get the calf mobile and loose and get it nice and strong.
Yeah.
And then doing exercises specifically to strengthen that area and keep the tissue mobile often reduces the plantar fasciitis.
Our guest today is Matthew Goodemote. Physical therapy is the topic. 800-348-2551. Here's another person I think was disconnected before getting on the air. Donna in Woodstock. Donna, go ahead.
Hi. Just recently, I was in a rehab to sort of learn how to walk again and doing exercises, and I passed, you know, the physical therapy and the occupational therapy. But somewhere in the couple of weeks that I was doing that, I think I sprained something, because when I bend down and then I straighten up, I have to sort of shake my leg out. Hmm. And then I can feel when it straightens, I you feel a bump.
Uh-oh.
I'm going bump.
You
I've
feel
been bumping a lot.
You feel
was
a bump.
That a Clouseau reference? All right, go ahead.
Yes, it was.
Beautiful,
yes.
Beautiful, Donna.
So right. You feel a bump, like the transition. You feel something. I'm not
yes.
sure.
Yes, okay. And what I do is I sort of mm-hmm. put the leg. Okay, so I've bent.
Yep.
And then I straighten up.
Yep.
But I can feel that that I got to do something.
Yeah.
And I was shaking it out, and it was good.
Yep.
But and I sort of pull my, it's the right leg mainly. It happened
yep.
a couple times on the left. And I pull the knee forward, and, you know, it goes to yep. the side, boom. But I'm old, and I'm afraid I'm going to break.
It's not likely that you will break anything. And there are tendons
well,
that run on the outer part of the leg, and they're probably, you're feeling a tendon. So when you're bending over, that tendon is moving behind the bone. And then when it comes up and you shake it out, it's snapping over top of it, the IT band.
Okay.
That would be my guess what's happening. So.
All right.
And then I sometimes, and I've been sort of doing this bumping thing.
Yeah.
Like even sometimes when I walk, bump, bump, bump. And, you know, if you put your hand on me, you yep. feel
yeah.
bumping, and I'm not ready for this.
No.
Yeah. Is it where do you, when you put your hand on it, where do you feel? What part of the leg?
Oh, well, especially it's right at the top of the where the foot, where the leg, I guess that's the femur, meets the hip.
Oh.
You know,
okay.
And I don't want to pull anything and break anything.
Yeah. It's a tendon. It's not the one I was thinking of, but it's most likely still that. There are some rare cases where it can be something happening in the joint too, and that would be something that over the radio I wouldn't want to give you any real advice.
Yeah, well,
on.
I want to come see you.
All right. Well, yeah. You'll have to work that out off the air. Or we lose our license.
Yeah.
Hey, Donna,
okay.
You want to know something? I'm not easily amused after all these years in the business. The Peter Sellers reference absolutely made my week, so thank you very much for that.
Thank you. Well, you make my everyday.
Well,
you're wonderful.
Well, thanks for
and
the call.
And I believe that martinis should have gin.
Oh, yeah. That's another show. You and I do that show together, Donna. Thank you for the call. I agree. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And let's go to Troy at Taylor's in Troy. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
So I'm 26, and I throw my back out almost once a month.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually at like right in between the shoulder blade and my spine.
Yep.
And now it's been making my foot hurt on the same side of my body. So I was looking for maybe a couple answers here.
Sure. So when you throw it out, is it a definite connection to the foot? Because that's an unusual connection. So, but let me just go back to the original part. So throwing the back out persistently and consistently in between the shoulder blades is often the cervical spine. So there was a doctor in the 1960s who poked needles in people. And when he did, he found out if you poke the disc on the lower part of the neck, it will refer into the shoulder blade area. So when people tell me anything about the shoulder blade, the first thing I think is it's actually coming from their neck. And the solution for this is to address it in both the thoracic spine and the cervical spine, which means restoring all movement and getting into a regular routine every day of doing exercises that encourage proper posture and also full range of motion of both the cervical and thoracic spine. And when your back is thrown out, usually that means that not only do you have pain, but it's difficult to move. And that difficulty moving is the source of the problem. So if you keep your joints moving in all their directions, then the chances of it getting thrown out will diminish.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay.
Well, thanks.
Thank you.
Good luck, Taylor. We appreciate the call. Linda in Old Chatham. Linda, you're on.
Oh, boy. A little time. I have a complicated story, but I think the intake person helped with giving you a backstory. I have brain cancer, brain lesions. I'm being treated with chemotherapy. It was brain surgery January. It was discovered in December 1st. It was. It all began last April with COVID. Oh. Neurological symptoms. I'd been to Sunnyview after the surgery and two other different physical subacute nursing homes.
Right.
And I said, I have an undiagnosed neurological affliction.
Yeah.
I'm already strong. I'm a social dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, why do you walk so funny? I said, just what I said. And I said, well, do 20 reps. I do 40 reps of everything.
Okay.
Right now, I have a diagnosis. I am being treated. I'm scheduled for physical therapy. I believe in the body-mind connection. I'm hoping this is going to be a worthwhile endeavor. Mm. What is your opinion?
Yeah, so when you're going through any type of treatment for the brain, then there are definite things physical therapists can do to help with balance and gait activity. So it is definitely a worthwhile pursuit.
Oh, okay, because it certainly wasn't before because I wasn't diagnosed.
Right, and now that you're getting treatment, then they'll be able to do things. But it's going to be primarily
right, but
for...
What it is it affected my gait.
Yes, exactly.
And I have tremors and twitches.
Yeah, and so they'll be able to...
my speech,
to,
as you can hear.
No, you're
but
sounding
I,
fine,
you know,
Linda.
I used to walk like a drunken sailor after chemotherapy. I walk like a toddler now. I haven't driven since last July.
Oh, boy,
but
I'm sorry.
I want to know how far physical therapy will go to be... for me to get my body back.
Well, it's going to depend also on the lesions of the brain and what effect they're having, and also on the chemotherapy and what effect it has. But all that being said, this is a very appropriate thing to go to physical therapy to learn strategies.
Okay, then I am thoroughly looking forward to going then.
Okay. Well, Linda, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Nina in Hudson Valley. Nina.
Yes, great. Okay, so hi.
Hi.
Taking this call.
Oh, hello.
So I have a big story, and I'll try to be. I'm going to pull over.
All right, we only got a couple minutes here, so let's do the Cliff Notes version. Okay.
All right. So over 30 years ago, I was run over by a motorcycle in the Midwest. I had a surgery, but you know, when I got back to New York, I had to have the surgery done over again. So then. So let's see. So I was bedridden for a couple. I had a chin tip fracture. I had, you know, head injury and other injuries. Okay, so I was bedridden for a couple of months in a wheelchair, for a couple of months on a cane for months, and then fast forward 20 years later, like that last woman, except I didn't have lesions, but I did have meningiomas, brain surgery, and I was on a cane after the brain surgery. Everything was accelerated again in the knee area, and two orthopedic surgeons told me I had a torn meniscus and arthritis and told me to have surgery, but I went to my medical doctor and he suggested to take some supplements, which I did, and within 2 months I was off my cane with taking, you know, Boswellia, glucosamine, multivitamin, probiotic, and fish oils. So I have had no pain for 10 years. Now, here we fast forward to the day after my second vaccine. I had the Pfizer vaccine the day after, this pain returned. It returned for a day. It went away. I doubled my supplements. I do Qigong every day and, you know, yoga and, you know, I'm constantly moving. And the pain went away. And then 2 months later, which is just like 2 weeks ago, the pain came back where I'm back on a cane, on and off on a cane. I do a lot of movement. Yeah. So my doctor said that this is a common thing, that they're finding that after the vaccine that there's inflammation sometimes develops in a weak area. So I have an appointment to go see my GP and then we'll take it from there. But what I noticed as of last night, the inflammation, which was on the right side of my knee, has now moved over to the it was on the left side. Now it moves over to the right side. Mm-hmm. It has gone down considerably, but I don't know. I mean, I thought, you know, I didn't have pain for 10 years.
So if it is coming from the vaccine, it's going to be definitely a case for the medical doctor to help you with.
Right.
However, with swelling of the knee, I would advocate for a compression, and then I'd also advocate for elevation and try to keep the swelling to a bare minimum, which will definitely help the pain in the knee and also likely help you be able to walk without the cane.
Okay, Nina, thanks a lot. Very quickly, now we only have about a minute. Gene in Northampton's been waiting a really long time. Gene, go ahead. You have 1 minute. You're wasting your minute. Hello, Gene. Are you there?
Oh, hi. Oh, yes. Well, I just wanted to know, I was told I had tendonitis of the ankle and that my arch has fallen on my right foot. And I just wanted to know what kind of treatment there is for that. They keep... you know, it's not actually, they want me to have an MRI to have an actual diagnosis.
Yeah. Okay.
And
so
I went to
we only have about
sports
20...
medicine, put me on a boot.
Oh, yeah.
We only got about 20 seconds here.
Go ahead.
So if it's a true fallen arch, then you will likely need to have support and put in it. But getting the MRI is a good idea because right where that arch comes in is a tendon called the posterior tibialis. And it could just be that you have some problems there, in which case there's definitely exercises and therapy for. Until you get that MRI, it probably is a good idea to have the boot. But I would advocate to get out of that and do exercises for those tendons and muscles.
Gene, I'm sorry, but that's where we will have to leave it. We are out of time. Matthew Goodemote, how do people find you on the World Wide Web, sir?
GoodemotePT.com.
How do you spell Goodemote?
GoodEmote, and then the letters PT. So GoodemotePT.com.
Goodemote, is it like good, eh? moats.
Yeah, so okay. My ancestors built moats around castles and Italian kings.
And they were real good. They were good at moat. Okay, well, that was not that good. All right, thank you, sir. Support comes from Berkshire Botanical Garden, Stockbridge, presenting Taking Flight, a flight-inspired season, including outdoor sculpture on Caterpillar Lab, July 1st through 5th. Time tickets required, berkshirebotanical.org. At Emporium Farm Brewery, North Greenbush, New York, offering 12 taps with its own British-style beers. At New York State Farm Beer, Wine, Cider, and Mead, emporiumfarmbrewery.com for details. Once again, thanks to Matthew Goodemote for being here. Thank you for listening. And many apologies to the many people still on the line. Time to hang up, but he'll come back soon. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Amber Sickles screened the calls today and did a pretty good job of it, too. Our producer is Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Allie B's Cooking and Catering with Kizzy Williams-Francisco live at In Pison.